Blog Talk Radio.
Nation. Hello, Scott.
Hello, hello.
Hello. And
we have
our
resident Islanders fan?
No.
The other guy that's joining us, where I believe that after that comment about the jersey, he becomes an Islanders fan.
I don't think so.
Well, that is our third partner on this podcast. It is Mr. Kevin Murray, who is joining us.
Hello, everybody.
And hello.
Hello, hello.
And after an incredibly long opening, we're going to decide to start by running the breakout for us. So, gentlemen, we are talking about the New York Rangers and their preseason. Which of the New York Rangers already has been the most impressive you've seen so far? Mr. Kevin Murray, start us off.
Well, I think that this preseason, the thing that we've really got to get me excited about is Chris Kreider and how just locked in that he looks. I know this is something that we probably heard all last year. Everyone was like, oh, he's finally locked in. He's going to be in the breakout year. But I think this might be the year that we've all been waiting for, that he's going to be able to finally put all his speed and strength and all of his skills to the test, and he'll be actually maybe produce a close to 30-goal season that we've all think that he's capable of.
30-goal would be impressive. I would absolutely love that.
Well, if there's any indication that Kevin might be right, if you watched the preseason game against the Islanders the other night, the pass he made on the game-tying goal was spectacular, and especially one you don't normally see from Chris Kreider. Scott, who do you have for your most improved returning New York Ranger?
Returning New York Ranger or Ranger that I wanted at the trade deadline last year?
Could be a little bit of both, but the guy's coming back
returning
right now.
Returning Ranger, I'm going to go with Matt Zuccarello. I think Matt Zuccarello is putting up 28 to 31 goals this year. He'll probably have around 40 assists. I'm looking for him to round, I'm going to guess, probably around a 70-point season this year. I think he's got all the tools. He's got the drive. He's got the motivation. This is Zook's year. This is the year that Zook proves how much he loves New York, how much he loves the fan, and how much this game drives him to play even harder. If I have to go with my other with my other guy, it's who I wanted that the Florida Panthers traded at the deadline for a third-round draft pick, I believe, was Brandon Peary. Brandon Peary has done nothing other than impress during the preseason. I'm hoping that AV decides to keep him, possibly. I would like to see him in a top nine role. Most likely you're going to see him in the fourth line role. But I think Brandon Peary is going to be the most fantastic Ranger other than Mika Zibanejad.
Well, that leads right into the next question. But before we get too far away from this, I got to say, it's a toss-up for me. Your guys are absolutely in the mix. But JT Miller's looked really good. The pass he made on the Ryan Graves goal in Philadelphia last week, the other highlight of the preseason, it was fantastic. And Kevin Hayes just looks a lot more confident and a lot more capable of doing things this year. Whether or not it translates is a different story. So, Scott, we already got your off-season acquisition. Kev, what do you think? Best off-season acquisition, now they look so far.
Well, I'm going to cheat a little bit just to say that the best off-season acquisition has got to be the man from Russia himself, Pavel Buchnevich. He, and with Kreider and Zibanejad, all three of them together on that line, is really going to be a driving force for the Rangers. Because you figure if you have Stefan, Zuccarello, and Nash in your top line slash matchup kind of roles, since they can be trusted in the defensive zone, or at least AV always has them trusted in the defensive zone, that second scoring line is really going to be what sets the Rangers apart on offense if they're going to make any leaps forward this year.
Well, and we haven't even mentioned Mika Zibanejad yet, who has looked incredibly strong on the puck and very capable defensively and even better. I'm going to turn it over to you, Scott. What are you signing over to me right now?
VC, 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 baby. VC will be breaking into the top six line, or the top six line, players on this team by midseason. Guarantee it, this kid has everything that you want. There's a reason why he was the most coveted free agent that was this year. Regardless if he's a rookie or not, the kid is smart. The kid plays hard on the boards. He's a phenomenal skater. Watch him make waves for this team, because I'm guaranteeing you, he's going to most likely go after the Calder.
Well, going to Kevin's guy, Buchnevich, you kind of saw that too, where he was getting those moments, and suddenly he gets the goal against the Flyers, and then everything clicked for the rest of the game. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that. And now we have dead silence.
Yeah, well, that was a cue for Kevin to come in on that, but it's all right. He's fresh. He's new. It's all right. He's
all
a
right.
Corsi guy. We understand Corsi guys that do
take
a while.
No. He knows his numbers. That's what he's got. All right. So we already got our thoughts on BZ and Buchnevich. But looking at the guys that went down to Hartford this week, Kevin, I'm going to start with you on this one. Who do you think, out of either an extra player that's going to be a healthy scratch or one of the guys that went back to Hartford, who do you think we're going to see again?
I'm not really so sure right now. I guess it's Gervais is news going back to Switzerland to play, and I mean, I guess the talk of the town so far right now is that Buchnevich is going to be coming back sooner rather than later. AV's really talked him up and that he thinks that he'll be back here on the fourth line before we know it. I'm not really all that familiar with his play. I know he's been hurt a little bit recently, so hopefully he can get into shape quick enough so we can actually see him in action and see what kind of player they might be able to have on the NHL level.
All right, Scott, who do you think we're going to be seeing
as far as coming up?
and making an impact, yes.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Boone Nieves. Yeah, you know, Cristobal Boone Nieves from the University of Michigan. Hail to the victors. I believe he will be the first first person called up from Hartford. He's impressed. The kid was great over in Michigan. He also impressed in the few games that he played in Hartford last year. He does have all the tools, but the biggest problem is why I don't think he's going to be called up that soon, is within about 3 to 4 weeks, I believe, Oscar Lindberg will be ready to come back onto this Rangers team. My biggest question is who goes down?
Well, Derby had the two-way contract, and I gotta agree with you. Who goes down is going to have huge ramifications on that. For me, the guy that I was most impressed with, I know everybody else wants to say Gilmore or Clendenning. Ryan Graves, with a little bit more seasoning, could be on this roster. And given that this team is going to need more offense from the back end, that might make him a lot more like needed. And he's a guy I'm going to watch out for. I'm not going to say he's going to be a gossip spear type of guy, but he could still come in and contribute, especially with the other news going around. We're going to insert this right now. What are your thoughts right now about the possibility of trading Dylan McElrath, Scott?
I don't know. I don't know what you're going to get from McElrath, and I think the Rangers' hands are tied, and most GMs do know about it. I've been thinking, I've been pondering for the past few days, and there is a player that a lot of people have been saying that the Rangers most likely can trade and most likely will trade, and his contract is very, very enticing to a lot of teams. Yeah, he's only making 2.9 per season, but a consistently injured Kevin Klein, who I do not want to see going off this team, very well could be traded to bring in a player such as a Cam Fowler. Or, you know, if you package him with McElrath and you do a two-for-one. The biggest problem I'm having right now is trying to wrap my head around what we're going to go ahead and do with, you know, with Kevin Klein. McElrath, you know, because of the back spasm injury to Kevin Klein, he's not going to be moved anytime soon. The Rangers, you know, it's, you know, there's no reason to move him. There's no reason to trade him. You're not going to get much for him. That's the problem. You know, it's he, in my opinion, was, other than that one goal he had in that first game from the point, he wasn't that impressive. I was not happy with his play. You guys may have a different opinion on it, but I don't see his value being worth more than maybe you might get a third or a fourth rounder for him. So I don't see the point of moving him versus you can move Kevin Klein, who in reality is going to bring in more for this team, whether it be a draft pick, whether it be a prospect, whether it be, you know, packaging him with another player to go ahead and bring in, you know, a Trouba or, you know, or a Fowler, like I said before. I don't see McElrath really get moved this year. I just don't. I mean, Larry Brooks does have a lot of inside information. I know that's where we got it from. I don't see McElrath being moved off this team.
I think the biggest thing with McElrath right now is the fact that the Rangers just don't know what he is. I mean, he's played 38 NHL games, and for some reason, they just don't seem to want to give him the time to actually develop or to see what they have. I don't know if McElrath, what his ceiling could be. I mean, maybe in an ideal world, it could be like a fourth defenseman, but the Rangers just don't seem to have any interest in finding that out. And I'd have to agree with you, Scott, that it's not the time to trade him. If anything, they should play him in the early season to try and get his value up if they really want to move on from him. I mean, Kevin Klein's value is much higher, and it's probably never going to get any higher than it is right now. He's already, I'm pretty sure, 32 years old. He's only going to slow down. He's a big guy. He's susceptible to injury. He blocks lots of shots, which makes him even more susceptible to injury. But the Rangers are actually going to try and get a return and get some more salary off the books. I mean, Klein is the guy that you'd want to trade. But if they're going to trade McElrath, I think at least first they have to see what they have. They can't just let him go for a fourth-round pick. I mean, he was the 10th overall pick. They have to – they've invested so much time into him already. I mean, through injuries, through development. He's been on the – he was drafted, I think, 5 years ago or 6 years ago. The Rangers shouldn't just give him away for nothing right now.
Extending upon both of your points, it's even more curious why you would pick right now – to try to move McElrath, because The biggest jump in his development came under Jeff Bookaboom. Jeff Bookaboom is now the assistant coach of the New York Rangers, coaching the defense. And I think you almost have to let it play out, even if he's a seventh defenseman, because it's not going to cost anything to keep him here. And if we're keeping him for, say, in Adam Clendenning or I can't even think of anyone else. Thank you, Nick Holden. Was that Game of Thrones Hodor? But it was just one of those things of, I mean, Holden's looked okay. There's been times where he's played well and then disappeared and caused problems in the defensive zone. But he's a veteran, so I guess you can see what they got there. But you should at least try with Dylan McElrath. The other thing is, obviously, protection. And the Ratko Gudas incident last week is exactly why you need Dylan McElrath.
Being sent down.
That is correct, too. What that's going to do is, that's going to mean Chris Kreider is going to have to step up and have more penalty minutes and more time off the ice. And if you're not on the ice, you can't be a 30-goal scorer. It's almost that simple. We haven't had 100 penalty-minute 30-goal scorer in, I think, at least 8 years, maybe 10. Maybe not since Bertuzzi. Which, you guys have both hinted at this. So, who is the player that will not be on the New York Rangers at the trade deadline? So, once again, Kevin Klein, but is there any other person you think is going to find their way out of New York? Starting with Kevin.
I think there's a huge chance that we could see the exit of Rick Nash this year. I think we're finally getting to the point where if you're going to the trading deadlines and a team needs a score and there's only one more year left on his contract, I think if Nash rebounds this year and is playing well, I think there's a huge chance that Gordon moves him for some sort of package that can help the Rangers in the future. I mean, if you look at the age of their forwards right now, the Rangers forward group is very, very young with one exception. I think there's a huge chance for them to move Nash this year and to actually commit to the youth movement and try and, you know, and bring up all these guys like they into the first line, and they're not going to need Nash anymore. And maybe that this is finally the time that he exits.
Scott, who do you got?
Yeah, it's really tough for me to even pick a specific player. I'm going to kind of agree with Kevin on it in the fact that I think that's the only player that you see being moved off this team. But part of me is thinking that now you have to hold on to Rick Nash. He just got put the A on his jersey. He is one of the alternate captains on this team now. He's impressed. I mean, his playoffs last year against Pittsburgh, he actually impressed me. More than he's done over the past, you know, three and a half years he's been with this team. I don't know, you know, when you're looking at moving Nash, who you're going to move him for. You know, most teams are going to ask the Rangers to retain salary cap. And, I mean, if that's the case, there's no reason to move him. You're going to have plenty, you know, I mean, the big acquisition that most fans want is going to be Shattenkirk out of St. Louis. Shattenkirk has already stated that he wants to come to the Rangers. Whether he gives a home team discount, I highly doubt it. But, if you're going to move Nash, it's for cap reasons only. I do think it will diminish this offense a little bit because you're missing that big body. You know, and Mark, you love to make fun of me about this, but I told you that Kevin Hayes, after his rookie season, was going to be the kind of player that Rick Nash is. I mean, I said it numerous times. I have not really seen too much improvement with Kevin Hayes. I'm hoping that Jimmy Vesey goes ahead and brings back the way he was that rookie year out of Kevin Hayes. But I just don't see, when you have a big body and the talent that Rick Nash has, there, other than moving him for cap reasons to try and get Shattenkirk for next year, I don't see a reason to move him. If you're going to move a player, I mean, you're going to be looking to try and move Tanner Glass's, you know, contract to get it off the books and free up some cap space. You might be looking at Jesper Fast. You might be looking at Oscar Lindbergh. The Rangers team, you know, down the middle, they have so many centers on this team between Mika, Kevin Hayes, Peary, who can play center himself, you know, Derek Stepan. You know, I just, you know, I see if they're going to do that, I see them moving Oscar Lindberg, most likely Jesper Foss, at the trade deadline. I don't see it really being Rick Nash. If you're going to move Rick Nash, it's most likely going to be in the off season. But you have to see what he brings to this team this year during the season. If he brings a resurgent year like he had a couple years ago of a 35, 40 goal season and has a great playoff, you're not going to really see him be moved, because that's the only downfall in Rick Nash's game right now is his playoff appearances.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, guys, for about 2 minutes. We're going to come back and we're going to start our full preseason, our season preview. Delve into our season predictions and questions that we have. Start with the most obvious one. Hey guys, has the San Jose Sharks made a cup run reasonable explanation? Expectation for the Rangers. Start with you, Scott.
Can you repeat that question again?
I will repeat that question in its entirety.
You had a couple mistakes in the words. You know, Craig Carton
right.
Sounding.
Have the San Jose Sharks made a cup a reasonable reasonable expectation for the New York Rangers?
No. No. Are you saying because of how young they were and how the Rangers are very similar to how they were last year?
Or how they retooled everything and kind of kept a lot of the core the same?
It's a lot of the core, but I mean, You gotta look at that team, dude. I mean, you know, when you look at them, I mean, you got Patrick Marleau, you got, you know, oh my God, why can't I not think of his name?
Joe Pavelski.
You got Pavelski, but the young kid that's on there.
Thomas Hurdle.
I'm drawing a blank. No, not Thomas Hurdle. Not Thomas Hurdle,
Logan,
who actually...
Logan Couture?
Yes, Logan Couture.
Brent Burns?
Yeah. They have stars on that team. They have all stars on that team. I think what it did was a coaching change. Peter DeBoer did a phenomenal job with that team and turning it around. Look, you know, my expectations at the beginning of the season are always going to be the same. I think the Rangers are going to go ahead and win the Cup. That's me as a fan. But logically, I see this team, I mean, their defense is not strong enough. Mark Stahl is not the player he was before his concussion that he got from his brother. Dan Girardi, I'm hoping, has a bounce back here. You know my thought to McDonough ever since he got the C on his jersey. I mean, his game, in my opinion, has regressed. I think he's coping with the same issues that, you know, Brian Leetch did when he got the C put on his chest. I think it's a ton of pressure. A lot of people go ahead and say that Ryan McDonough is basically an extension of AV and that the actual captain of the team is Alain Vigneault. But, you know, unless they do something with this defense, now I'm very impressed with our four lines that we're going to have. I think they've got plenty of offense. You're going to see a lot of these kids that we got are very much going to impress. And what Kevin said with Buch, he was right on the money. Buchnevich, I mean, everybody was upset when the Rangers traded Duclair. That the real cream of the crop that we had, you know, as far as a prospect was Buchnevich. I think he will be a superstar. You know, not Tarasenko like, but, you know, similar in that kind of mindset. But when you have to go ahead and look, I don't think unless they go ahead and fix this defense and bring in one, maybe two guys to go ahead and shore up the blue line, I don't see them making a Stanley Cup run. And it's, you know, it's not something I want to say because Lundqvist is coming towards the end of his career. But I, you know, when I have to think about it logically, this team is not 100% built for a cup.
Kev, you?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I mean, the defense is definitely the problem. And one question I'd have for you, Scott, is like, what do you think the captaincy really has to do with McDonough? I mean, don't you think that McDonough playing this poorly has to do with who he's paired with? The fact of the matter is they don't have a solid number two defenseman for him to play with. I mean, I like Kevin Klein. He's a good depth defenseman, but he's not a second defenseman. Dan Girardi is certainly not a second defenseman. And even if he has some sort of bounce-back year, how far can he bounce back? I mean, he's just not good enough to play those 24 minutes a game against top lines every single game. He can't handle that anymore. He needs a sheltered role, and maybe in that kind of role he would be serviceable. But he's never going to be a top-pairing defenseman with McDonough. They need a Shattenkirk. They need a Trouba. They need someone else. And I'm not saying that they're going to be able to go out and get one of those guys, but for McDonough's play to be what it was, he needs a better partner.
You know, when you look at that, though, I mean, it's been, and the way I look at it is ever since he's had the C put on his chest, you know, on that jersey, I've seen a difference in his game. Not because of his partner, but the way that he's trying to shut players down. McDonough was a big-time shutdown defenseman. You know, when he came over, you know, and his rookie year with this team, especially, you know, during that Stanley Cup run. Him and Girardi, yes, you are right. His partner does have a lot to do with it. But his game has changed, in my opinion.
All right, well, let's go to the right for the next question, which is, how much do you guys think this team is going to have to rely on Henrik Lundqvist?
Too much, as always, would be the correct answer. I mean, the guy has been the best goalie in the league since his entire career, and they had one legitimate, serious cup run with him. I mean, that really shows a failing in front of him, I think, on the defensive end. And the only chance that they're going to have to get back there is if he plays out of his mind again. Like he has the past 2 years that's bailed out this defense, that's been struggling for the past 2 years.
Scotty?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking up some information. Can you repeat that? I'm sorry again, Kev. I apologize.
How much do you think this is going to rely on Henrik Lundqvist?
This team has to rely on him heavily. With the way this defense is, you don't have lockdown defensemen. you know, it's, I think Lundqvist is going to be the biggest factor in this team as far as defensively. You know, I'm still not, you know, Ranta is a great, you know, backup on this team, but if this team's going to go anywhere, it has to be based on the play of Henrik Lundqvist between the pipes the entire year. I'm expecting him to probably play around 60 games, maybe more. And I think, you know, those extra games he has to play are going to be vital from becoming either the, I don't see them winning the Metro. I see them, if they want to try and get home ice and be the number two, that it's going to rely on the shoulders of Henrik Lundqvist.
All right. Will Rick Nash return to form? Or what is Rick Nash's form? Take that one, Kevin.
I think Nash is going to bounce back this year. I think he's fully healthy. I think having more depth at forward is going to only help him out. I mean, he's going to get some more favorable matchups. I think just in general, the Rangers forward group as a four-line unit is going to be very hard for lots of teams to match up against. I mean, if you have a fourth line with Brandon Peary and Jesper Fast on it, I mean, that fourth line is still going to be able to put up some points. Like, it's not just going to be a grind-it-out, chip-it-out-of-the-zone kind of fourth line. And that's only, I mean, that's just going to rise the tide of all the boats on the team. Like, I think offensively, I think it could be a very good year for lots of the Ranger forwards.
Scotty.
Kevin, I actually want to kind of comment on that. Do you see Fast breaking into that fourth line when you're looking at Grabner, Peary?
I think we're looking at Grabner, Peary, Fast pretty solidly. I think Fast is one of AV's guys. I think he's great on the penalty kill. I think, I mean, last year they had him on the second line, which I think was, you know, a role where he got a little overexposed at times. But I think as a fourth line NHL player, I think Fast is more than serviceable. I think he's a guy that could be, you know, like in previous years, like O'Brien Boyle can put up, obviously they're not the same size of player, but he could put up, you know, a 20 or 25 point season, kill penalties, and always be relied upon.
Fast did have a 30-point, 10-goal, 20-assist season last year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in a fourth line with Brandon Peary and with Grabner, I think that line could be very fast and get a lot of shots to the net. I think all three of them could end up with very solid years.
What is the fourth line you'd go with, Scott?
I mean, Peary's definitely there, but yeah, I'm wondering where the mindset of AV is when Josh Joris comes back. You know, I mean, is Brandon Peary then the odd man out? Is Brandon, you know, is it going to be Grabner? Is it going to be Fast? I think Peary's made the case to stay, but I think the Rangers are valuing Joris a little bit more than Brandon Peary right now.
I think they're valuing Joris as a fourth liner maybe a little bit more, but Brandon Peary's, because his role on the power play is what it is, he is making his case to be here on this roster every game. And they have not made, in the preseason especially, any game they're playing with Peary, they're just giving it to him, and he's just firing the puck as much as they get. But we'll get to the specialty teams in a minute.
Actually, Morris, you know, one thing I wanted to comment on that real quick.
Go ahead.
If you look at the Rangers' power play and you look how Zibanejad is and Brandon Peary for the most part, it's very Washington Capitals, you know, type power play where it's pass, 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 Peary, shot. And, I mean, the power play's improved quite a bit with that kind of mindset. And I definitely agree with you with Peary on the power play. I mean, it's, you know, sky's the limit with that. We have not seen an actual real Rangers power play. Yandel was supposed to be the guy. Boyle was supposed to be the guy. But having Brandon Peary out there and being able to take that shot, you see a huge difference in how this team's power play is being run.
Kevin, not just Peary, Zibanejad too. I mean, having that right-handed shot on the power play, something they've been missing for a long time. I mean, how many times out there was there just no trigger man where the puck would just keep going around in circles? And every time that Zibanejad got the puck on the power play, he seemed to rip one. And he got a couple goals in the preseason too. I think that's definitely a preview of things to come.
Well, do you think this team, what are your thoughts on the power play for this team? Are they going to become too reliant on it? Is it going to improve? Start with you, Kevin.
I mean, I think it's certainly possible that they could become too reliant on it simply because, I mean, if they can't get the puck out of their own zone sometimes on nights when they're struggling defensively, they might need those special team goals to really carry the team for at some points in the season. But I think the power play should definitely be an actual asset for us, which is something that I feel very weird saying because I thought it before and then been proven wrong many times over. But, I mean, with this many good, talented people up front, with Peary, with Zibanejad, I think that they have a chance to actually score some power play goals.
Scott, we'll go to you. What are your thoughts? Is this power play going to be better, top 10?
Easily, this power play breaks top 10. Just like Kevin said, and he corrected me, you know, in the best way, Brandon Peary and Mika Zibanejad could be, you know, the key pieces of what we haven't had for years. I mean, you know, would we have Brian McCabe was supposed to come in, save the power play, Dan Boyle was supposed to come in, Keith Yandle, and it's never worked. You've never had a true guy on this team that has the actual shot that these guys do. And, I mean, I'm hoping this team doesn't rely on the power play solely like the Mets rely on the home run ball. But, you know, I honestly believe this team could be top 10 as far as power play. You know, they have the talent to do it.
They've been top 10 and as high as 5 in the last couple of years, but they've never finished there. They finished at 14th. This is one of the questions I have for you later. But
it just has run so hot and cold the past couple of years. I mean, they'll have one good month, and then that just inflates the rating for the rest of the season. I mean, hopefully it can be at least more consistent this year.
The last time that they were a top 5 power play unit, Brian Leetch was their point man.
You also have to look at, like, with the Washington Capitals and how I was describing with the Rangers power play, it's going to be very similar.
True.
The Washington Capitals won, you know, the division as well as the President's Cup solely on a lot of power plays, you know, with penalties being, you know, the Rangers creating a penalty and getting on the power play, and they would score nonstop. They had one of the most lethal power plays in the entire league. If the Rangers can go ahead and be able to create that kind of a situation for themselves, I think that they could easily, you know, be, you know, second in the Metro. They could very well win the Metro, but like I said, it's going to be also reliant on what this defense does for the team.
Well, before we move on to the next thing, one thing I've noticed on the power play, when it's been successful, Chris Kreider has been in front of the net, in front of the goaltender, not to the side, trying to deflect the puck the way he has been the last couple years. Here's another question. I think it's a huge one. With the addition of Mika Zibanejad, is he going to end up being the matchup center, which then is Derek Stepan, truly a number one? Scott, take that one first.
You know my thoughts on Stepan. He's never been a true number one. Mika's young. He's, what, 22, 23 right now? I believe, you know, he does. I don't believe he has the penalty kill skill that Stepan does, but I believe, you know, he's definitely right now, if he keeps up the offensive production and the faceoff percentage, I believe, I'm not sure, Kevin or Mark, you know, if you guys during the preseason know what his percentage was. I believe, was it over 50? I believe.
I have to check. I know Stepan is 46% for last season. I don't know about the preseason. I have to look that up.
Yeah, I don't have the preseason stats in front of me.
But, I mean, you got to look at, I mean, Mika wins. He wins faceoffs, which is what you need, especially on a power play as well.
I honestly believe
that Mika, yet coming in here off a trade and being a first, you know, being his first year in the blue shirt, has definitely, in my opinion, won over the first line spot. It is now Mika is your first line and Stepan is your second line. No questions asked.
I don't think that talent-wise, maybe right now or what we've seen, that would be the case. But I think that Stepan is going to continue to be that number one center with AB at the helm, at least in the beginning of the season, at least through December. I mean, I have always been a bit of a Derek Stepan apologist. I think he's gotten a little bit of a raw deal from the fans. I mean, yes, he's not a number one center in the fact of he's not a Sidney Crosby. He's, you know, not a John Tavares. He's not that caliber of player. But I think he is a number one center on a good team. I think he's good in all zones. You know, his points per game are still very high for someone his age. He has done everything the Rangers have asked of him. He kills penalties. He's good on the power play. I mean, I'd like to see him shoot the puck more. But I think that he is that number one center for them. I think that he can go up against any other team's lines, top lines, and I think he can still put up the points that he can put up against them. And I think that's what the Rangers need.
If he ends up going away from other teams' top lines, let's say if they use Zibanejad in that as the matchup center, is that going to increase his production, you think?
I think his production has been pretty consistent, whether he's against top lines or against lesser lines. I think that's really the word that I used to describe Stefan the most, is he's just a consistent player. I'd rather him go against the other team's top lines and save Zibanejad to go against lesser lines, because I think then his offensive output would increase much more than Stepan's would.
Scott, would you agree with that? You Stepan as a matchup guy?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
All right. Now, we've gone through our thoughts on the collective bunch of forwards. We haven't even mentioned Matt Zuccarello yet, who played phenomenal in the World Cup. He's the Rangers' leading scorer two of the last 3 years. And it's just one of those things of, what are your thoughts about Zuc and where he fits in right now? Scott?
Say again, Mark, or cut out.
Where do you think Zuc fits in right now as far as, because we've only seen him one game in the preseason.
I mean, you have to look at also, he's coming off of, you know, the World Hockey Classic. Whatever the hell it's called. I didn't even watch it much. I just could care less. The World Cup of Hockey, and you know, it was like watching AHL hockey. I could care less about it. I think Zuc's going to take. He's going to need a few games to bring his game back up to what it should be. But as far as fitting in, I mean, he's still one of your top six players. He's like I've said before, he's the guy that brings energy to this team. You know, when this team needs it, he's the fire that, you know, I mean, and, you know, Chris Kostopoulos always tells me that, you know, the Rangers are too small, they're too small. But, you know, for this kid, you know, being, you know, as short as he is, he plays bigger than any other player on this team.
Yeah, and he's always going to fit in. I mean, he is the number one playmaker on this team. He creates more offensive opportunities than pretty much anyone else. I mean, I think he fits in right on that top line with Stepan and Nash. I think that spot's his. It's not going away. It's never going to be taken away from him. And I think that's rightfully so. I mean, he led the team in points last year. He always has his head up. He always is making guys miss with hits. He even at his small size, always getting in the corners and retrieving pucks. He does everything that the Rangers need to create offense. And I think a guy like that, like, people have to fit in around him.
All right. So, in that case, we're in agreement that the forwards are definitely the Rangers' strongest point. But do you think they could live with the lack of offense they're going to get from their defense? Kevin, we'll start with you.
I don't even know if it's a lack of offense from the defense. I'm more worried about the defense just getting the puck out of the zone in an efficient manner. I think that AV runs this very difficult defensive system. I mean, it requires getting the pucks and getting the pucks out of the zone very quickly, making that first pass very fast, having the forwards rush up the ice. And I don't know if the defense can get the puck to the forwards. I don't even think the Rangers are built that they need the defense to be having guys chip in 30, 40, or 50 points. They just need to be able to move the puck to the forwards and get the puck up the ice. And I think that the Rangers, too often, the defense just chips the puck out of the zone. They fly the puck to center. They fly the puck down the ice just so they can either get a quick change or they can reset. And that's not how AV's system is built. That's not how they're going to be able to generate offense. And if they keep doing that, I think that's where the defense lets them down the most. If they just keep chipping the puck out and they keep chipping the puck out over and over again, the Rangers just never are going to be able to generate offense.
Scott? I think we lost Scott for a second. All right, we're going to get back to that one in a second. All right. We'll continue on with this in a minute. We're just going to take a quick one-minute break.
Sorry about that, guys. I was having mic trouble.
Oh, wait.
I couldn't get it off of mute.
What are you doing with a mute anyway?
I don't think people want
to
hear me using my vape nonstop.
All right. Can you give the vape a couple minutes of rest?
No.
Is this
going to
be how we're going to get...
instead? Which would you rather have?
Is this how we're going to get back to getting the Red Apple
smoking,
Ale? Yeah, smoking.
Oh, dude, I'll definitely go back to the Red Apple Ale. I'll put the damn commercial on there, too. I could care less.
All right, Scott, do you think the Rangers can live with the lack of offense they're going to get from the blue line?
Would you say it's going to be lack of offense from the blue line? Because I think their blue line actually produces more offense than what it did the past, you know, other than losing Yandel.
Yeah,
you know,
45 points.
Other than losing 45 points, yeah.
And for all his druthers, Dan Boyle is right there, too. He had 24.
I think you can get about 20 points out of Shea, and Clendenin can give you maybe 20, 25 points. So, I mean, it's, you know, lack of offense in the blue line. I mean, like I think that with the new offensive players and the skill set that they have, I think that they can live without those numbers. You know, like I said, I'm still just concerned about the lack of defense from the blue line.
Well, can the team really survive the entire season with Girardi and Staal?
No.
No.
The short answer is no.
That was the quickest answer you could get.
All right. Wow. Good thing.
How could you picture – I mean, especially not in a role where Dan Girardi is playing 24 minutes a night and Staal is playing 21 minutes a night. I think that Staal even has a better chance to rebound than Girardi. I mean, the farther he gets away from the injuries, maybe he's recovered more. He's always been a better player than Girardi. But, I mean, how with these guys on the ice so much? They can't survive. The fact they didn't buy out Girardi really is the most questionable thing they did this offseason.
You got to look at the numbers, though. I think it's cap hit number is one of the biggest reasons why they didn't do it. I believe also this is the last year that he has his full no move clause or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. It becomes limited no trade.
So
and,
you know,
next offseason.
Yeah, I would rather take the chance on Girardi this year, and hopefully maybe he plays up to what he once was. Maybe he's healed up completely. But I would take the chance of this 1 year with Girardi instead of taking the cap hit that we're going to have over the next six by buying him out.
I think that the Girardi buyout next June before the expansion draft is the most inevitable thing about this Rangers season. I don't see any way that he plays to any sort of level that anyone's going to take him, that anyone's going to take him with any sort of money on his contract. Rangers are just wasting out the clock on Girardi. I mean, the
There's
fact
always
that
always Arizona.
June,
didn't they take the Pronger contract?
They took Pronger.
They have
four of those contracts
right now. Yeah.
They have four guys on their team that are making more than the rest of their team. And that still boggles my mind.
I would rather have the 6-year cap hit of a Girardi buyout than having to send Girardi to Arizona and have to send three more first round picks with him just to get them to take him.
Finally be a year where we don't trade a first-round draft pick. All right, two more questions before we go to break. We were talking about the power play before, but what have you guys seen so far with the penalty kill? And do you think it's at least improved from last season?
I think it's improved just because they've got some – they're not have Daniel Paille out there. That's an improvement. But, I mean, it really boils down to, once again, the defense. I mean, on that penalty – there's a power play goal. I don't know if it's the last preseason game or the game before, where Kevin Klein was just sitting on the ground, essentially, to block shots that Henrik Lundqvist could perfectly see. I mean, how many times are we going to see that backdoor pass on the power play, on the penalty kill, with Girardi or Klein just sitting there letting players walk in behind them to the doorstep? I mean, I think we saw it a lot last year, and I think we're going to see it a lot again this year. Even with some new forwards, that's not going to change the real root of the problem there.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest problems I do have with the Rangers with the constant blocking shots. I mean, if if Lundqvist is lined up, let him see the puck, you have a better chance, a higher percentage chance of him saving the puck when he has a clear line of sight versus Girardi or freaking Klein or Staal, you know, going ahead and getting in front of Lundqvist and just completely blocking his view. You're going to block the puck. Block it on the one-time shot if you can go ahead and do it.
Well, I think it's just going to depend on whether or not they can get their cohesion. You look at the game before last weekend, their power play was phenomenal. Then the game against the Flyers came in, and they coughed up a third-period lead and let up two power play goals. Granted, that's the preseason. You're trying to showcase or have guys that may or may not make the roster, see if they can fill that role. And in that particular case, I think they probably got Nathan Gerby back to Switzerland in that game, even though I like what I saw from him. Scott, I'm going to go to you on this one. What exactly is your level of faith that AV can develop Buchnevich and Vesey?
He did develop the Swedes, didn't he?
Which Swedes?
They were kind of already developed.
Were they already developed?
They were on their way, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
And Zuccarello came up and did better.
I think AV has a little bit to do with it. I think a lot of it's going to be on Arneal. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, AV's done nothing other than bring this team to the playoffs every year he's been the head coach on this team. He's developed players. I mean, he's done a good job with putting certain players out. I don't like the constant breaking lines up. I mean, that was the one thing that killed me with Tortorella, that he would do all the time. And I think it doesn't develop the chemistry. One of the things, somebody had told me, with Tortorella, his biggest thing is that when he sees lines developing chemistry, he immediately breaks them up. And that was, and that's from somebody that knows him very well. Not going to mention actually the person's name, but
you don't have to.
I'll tell you after the break, during the break, but.
Okay.
He's got to let these lines develop. Unless these lines are struggling, I mean, beyond belief, then switch it up. But, I mean, as far as, just keep these lines together. And I constantly see him breaking up lines nonstop. One player struggles to slice a little bit. If it's Rick Nash over at left wing, he's immediately putting Kreider up there. That's the one thing that kills me. I think he's very, very too quick to go ahead and, want to go ahead and try and make a difference in a line. As far as, developing players, it's, I don't know, that's kind of a toss-up for me, in all honesty.
I'll tell you one of the things, though, I'm really afraid about this season that we kind of touched on earlier, is when Lindbergh comes back and with Josh Joris, I'm really afraid that at some point we're going to see Jimmy Vesey in the press box. I think that if Peary solidifies his spot on this team, which he rightfully deserves, and his spot on the power play, which he rightfully deserves, I think maybe you'll see like a Hayes, Miller, Peary line. And I think maybe you'll see Lindbergh come in to be that fourth line center. I think that might unfortunately leave DC as the guy out. And I think we've seen this before with players. I think when AV puts someone in the press box, they never get the chance to come back in. Or they come in for one game and then they have an off game and then they're back in the press box for another week or two. And I don't know.
That person would be. I'm sorry, Kevin. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
If you're looking at a person, I mean, I honestly think it's going to be Grabner that gets put up in the press box and not VC this time. Lindbergh's a center. Joris is mainly a center, if I'm right.
Yes.
He's not really versatile on the wing. So, I mean, I would see Joris or Grabner being put up in the press box before I see VC. Especially if VC's game is growing.
I'm saying that Lindbergh or Joris comes in and gets that fourth line center role, and then that kind of leaves Peary. Like, if we can put Peary in that fourth line center role originally, then Peary slides over to the wing. That means they're going to be up an extra winger at that point. And I understand what you're saying about Grabner, but if he's killing penalties, and they let, I'm just saying that I could easily envision a scenario where VC struggles at first, you know, maybe he struggles defensively, maybe he just struggles adapting to the NHL game. And AV, I don't think, sometimes has long leashes with these young players.
You know,
let me ask both of you
a question real quick before you do that, Mark.
Yes.
The loss of Hagelin, and a lot of people blamed the few of the Rangers' struggles on not having Hagelin with his speed. Grabner's one of the fastest guys in the actual league. Does Grabner replace the void left by Hagelin?
No. He'll attempt it, in my opinion, but Grabner didn't have the hockey sense and still does not that Carl Hagelin did. Or does have.
I think Grabner Hagelin's probably a little bit of a better player, but, I mean, the Rangers made the right move in not giving him that contract. I know that, you know, Hagelin obviously won the Cup on Pittsburgh last year and was a vital part of that, but a player like that, you just can't be paying that much money to. I mean, you have to allocate your resources, I think, better than that, and I think Grabner is a good replacement for that kind of player. He's probably one step below him, but, I mean, having a guy that fast sometimes does create natural problems.
Well, we're going to take a quick two-minute break, guys, and we're going to come right back. We'll take a look at the Metro Division and the rest of the Eastern Conference. Guys, we're back again. Taking a look at the rest of the Eastern Conference. Let's go start with the Stanley Cup champion, Pittsburgh Penguins. Do you think they're a threat to repeat?
They're the biggest threat to repeat maybe in a very long time. I mean, they brought back pretty much their entire team. They still have, you know, two of the best players in the world in their theoretical primes. I mean, what more could you ask for? Three of the best players in the world, yeah.
Yeah, you know, actually, you could put four. You could actually put four.
Who's your fourth?
Crosby, Malkin, Kessel, and Letang. Letang's still one of the top defensemen out there. You can't deny that.
No, not denying that whatsoever.
Yeah.
I do have a concern that I always keep addressing whenever I talk about the Penguins. You think there is any possibility of a sophomore slump, sort of like what Cam Ward had, or even the Cam Ward syndrome, where he was unbelievable for a Stanley Cup run as a rookie and then comes in second year and just mediocre the rest of his career? I think Cam Ward had one more good season where he won a division.
They still have Fleury. I mean, they still have a pretty proven safety blanket at this point. I mean, I don't see any way that goal is really an issue for them this year.
You got to wonder also with Crosby having the concussion that he has right now, how that does affect this team, at least for the beginning of it. I think it actually hurts them big time. I also don't see their power play. I think the good old Sullivan power play will come back that haunted us for the years that Tortorella was here.
Oh, the Sullivan power play, one of my favorite things to watch. Just pucks passing around, no one taking a shot, no one in front of the net. It's really nice.
Yeah, well,
what is he doing?
I don't know.
You gotta wonder, are you okay over there?
Oh, yeah, I just had I heard a knock at my door that doesn't exactly help podcasts. So in that case, do you guys think the Washington Capitals, the Metro Division, is there to lose?
I honestly don't see them being as good as they were last year. And you saw it. They fell flat on their face against Pittsburgh. They really did. They had a great run last year. They were a solid team. I do not think they could keep up that same pace that they had last year. I see them. I'm seeing Pittsburgh as the one, Rangers as the two, Washington and the Islanders as, the three in the wild card.
Yeah, I think that Washington, they're obviously going to be worse, but I think the big thing for them is they just got to get Holtby to play less games. I mean, that was a really questionable coaching decision they made last year to have him play all those games when they were up so many points in the standings. I mean, if they get a little smarter, maybe he plays closer to 50 games this year, 55 games, maybe they'll be in better shape, but I still think that's a really good team. I mean, I think they're just solid from top to bottom. They're solid in the back end. They still have one of the best power plays in the league, and they're going to be dangerous. I do agree with Scott. I think the Rangers and Washington are going to be right there for the two spot, and then the Islanders are probably going to be behind the two of them, but I don't think that you can take the Capitals lightly at all.
I'm really kind of second-guessing the Islanders this year. I'm really hesitant on actually. I mean, I think they're more of the wild card team if they do make it. Losing Pozo, losing Nielsen. I mean, they lost two of their big key players. And yes, they got Ladd. I forgot who else they brought in. I think that actually hurts them. I think this hurts them almost as much as losing Molson when they trade him for Vanek.
Yeah, I definitely can see the Islanders taking a step back. I mean, I think Oposo probably is better than Ladd, and they gave Ladd that really ridiculous contract that they're going to be regretting in 3 years, but not to mention the Casey Cizikas contract. The team that really, from last year, that was below the Rangers that scares me the most is the Flyers. I mean, there is so much talent on that roster that if they put some of that together and they have a full season of Gost Despair, they have Voracek and Drew and Couturier, all are playing their best. That's a team that could put up a lot of goals. It could be in the hunt for the second, if not third spot in the Metro.
Scott,
go ahead, finish your thought.
That's as long as Gudas doesn't keep taking dumb penalties. And, he did just get a 6-game suspension. But how does he not get suspended on the hit he put on Jimmy Vesey?
Well, the best part is, did you hear the NHL said it was actually Vesey's fault for turning into the hit?
Yeah, I don't understand that. I mean, VC does move a little bit at the last second, but his movement did not cause his head to be the principal point of contact. Gudas still skated almost, 8 strides from the other side of the ice to line up the hit. I mean, the intent was clearly there. He should have been suspended. If he was suspended, then he wouldn't have done the next dumb thing. But he's a guy that's just a ticking time bomb. I mean, at some point he's going to hit someone else and he's going to get a 10-game suspension. I mean, he is a very good player, but he can't keep it together.
The one player on the Flyers that does scare me is Simmons. I mean, he is a talented player. He really is. As much as we hate him as Ranger fans, I wouldn't even second guess bring him. I wouldn't hesitate one bit bringing Wayne Simmons over to the New York Rangers.
He's a perfect example of a guy you love on your team but hate on another team.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
The guy that I would I'd be most fearful on the Flyers, though, and it's proof positive because after Goss Despair came up full-time last year, that team changed completely. And they are a bit of a power play team. I don't know how they're going to be 5-on-5, but their power play, if it's not going to be number one in the NHL, it'll be number two. It is that scary. And they run it so well, and they run it through Goss Despair. And, I mean, 17, 18 goals as a rookie, I mean, that's ridiculous. And he didn't even play the full season. And there's supposed to add on Provorov, too. That's going to make matters even better for them. By the way, any thought to Taylor Hall in New Jersey and how that'll help them?
I mean, he's an elite talent, but, I mean, there's just nothing else on that roster. Who's going to get him the puck? Who is going to – the Devils just seem like a mess right now. I don't even know who – I couldn't name the six defensemen that are on their roster if I tried off the top of my head. I mean, other than Schneider, I mean, what else do they have?
You got two 30-goal scorers from last year on that team, though. That's the only thing with Camilleri and Palmieri. Yeah, so, I mean, you do have two returning 30-goal scorers. Nonetheless, you know, they did score both their 30 goals on the last game of the year. But, you know, I mean, Hall's going to another team that's going nowhere. Yeah, and that's the way I look at it. You know, it's a shame. I think that the Devils fleeced the Oilers. Larson for Taylor Hall. It's a win-win for the Devils. But there's nobody else on that team. There's nobody else on that team, just like Kevin said, especially on defense. I mean, what, Green? Is Green one of their defensemen, I think? That's about it?
Yeah.
You know,
they don't have much of the blue line.
No, they don't. But you know who else doesn't really have much of the blue line other than McDonough? The Rangers.
You can't compare the Ranger forwards to the Devil forwards, though. I mean, the Devils have one top line that is really great, but then behind them, I mean, what else do they really have? I mean, their bottom six is really not good. It's filled with guys that are 19 and 21 years old. Like, they are completely unproven. They just picked up P.A. Parenteau off waivers. I mean, P.A. Parenteau wouldn't have a shot of making the Rangers right now.
It's almost like Pear Juice making the Rangers again.
And I guess that's what I call him, Pair
Dude. Yeah, here's the team out of the division, you know, Toronto. Where do you see them?
I see them surprising to people. I see them doing basically what Buffalo did last year. Now that they purge themselves on contracts and stuff like that, they might shock you. Even Buffalo might surprise you a little bit. They're not the team that I'd worry about that's an up-and-coming team. If you're going to look at the outside the division, because Ottawa Senators have a lot of talent. The question is, do they have any goaltending that could even balance this out? And is Guy Boucher going to get the most out of his guys? And is Derek Brassard going to produce what he did last year for the Rangers? If he does, that's a lot. That's a tremendous situation. The Red Wings are another one. But obviously, somebody want to take the obvious non-metropolitan division that we should be worrying about? Our Metro team.
But,
which
one are we talking about here? Are we talking about Florida?
The one that's
scared Tampa.
Either one that's in the state of Florida.
In all honesty, the team winning the President's Trophy this year is going to be Florida. They are good, and they're only getting better and better. Actually, you know, I'll take that back. Huberdeau being out is going to actually hurt them quite a bit.
Yeah, I thought for sure you were going to say Tampa there. I mean, this is also kind of the last ride for that Tampa team. Bishop's a free agent at the end of the year. There's something to be said for these guys probably wanting to do it and win the Cup together. I mean, the triplets are maybe the most feared line in the NHL at times. Stamkos giving the hometown discount. Drouin, you know, getting better all the time. I mean, Tampa to me is, I would say, the favorite to come out of the Eastern Conference right now, maybe just slightly ahead of Pittsburgh if they're on a little bit of a cup hangover.
The reason, though, with these Florida teams though, that could hand out these contracts is that players are going there for less money because it's the same amount that they could, you know, them, you know, when you're looking at like Ryan Callahan going down to Florida or to Tampa Bay and taking, what did he take, $5.8 million per year?
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think it's what he took. It's basically $6.8 million up here in New York. It's a win-win for these teams down in Florida, and they're just getting better and better and better. And a lot of it has to do is they can pay players less because there's no damn sales tax in Florida.
And they have to deal with all that sunshine. I mean, what a drag.
Yeah, I know. I know.
And
terrible.
And not
absolutely
have to be in the public eye every 5 seconds.
And you don't have to deal with Larry Brooks in freaking New York at all.
Right.
By the way, I can't. I can't stand Larry
Brooks.
What?
Well, okay, so because we'll never have him on the show. All right.
Oh, what a shame.
Not after he blocked me for me calling him an absolute moron and that Tortorella was right, you know, about him on Twitter, and he immediately blocked me.
The one thing I want to know about Brooks, though, is clearly everybody hates him and people in the locker room hate him. Who are his sources? Why is he the only guy on the beat that actually can publish information? Like, how is that possible?
I don't know. We're going to have a guest probably in like a week or two, I'm hoping. You know, and we'll be able to ask this guy how Larry Brooks does it because he was one of the beat writers, you know, for the past few years. And, you know, I'm not going to mention his name now. You both know, you know, who he is. I've already mentioned it. He's already been confirmed. But I want to know from him how on earth Larry Brooks gets all this information before anyone. It's almost like he's the Bob McKenzie of New York.
All right. Well, guys, we're going to take a quick 2-minute break again. We're going to come back with a hot take on the Rangers netminder, Henrik Lundqvist.
Can't wait to hear this horrible song coming up. Don't look at me like that.
All right, we're back to talk about Henrik Lundqvist and why his demise is not going to be a demise. I mean, I think I've read this article now each of the past 2 or 3 years that, oh, Lundqvist is getting older, the window's getting closed, it's getting smaller. Yeah, you know, the Rangers, they only have one more year with an elite Henrik Lundqvist. I think,
and Cam
Talbot
should have been the number one goaltender.
Cam Talbot should have been the number one goaltender. I think I even heard one or two people saying, oh, they should just give the job to Ranta last year. So, but, I mean, every year people predict that this is going to happen, and I'll admit he's getting older. But the fact of the matter is he has been an elite goaltender in the NHL for years now, and I think the Rangers still have a few more years of elite Henrik Lundqvist left. But I think it's very important that Vigneault plays him maybe some less games, maybe scales back a little bit. He shouldn't be playing 65 games every year. They have to preserve him. But Lundqvist, I mean, there was another New York sports icon who every year, the same articles written in the paper about how his demise was imminent, and that was Mariano Rivera, and that demise never came. And now I'm reading the same articles every year about Henrik Lundqvist, and that there, sometimes there are just these elite talents that when people are at the top of their game, that maybe that tail off goes a little slower than you might expect. And maybe the Rangers and Ranger fans in particular should not be calling for the head of Henrik Lundqvist when he has performed. He's the goalie of a generation, and he's been performing that way with a very lackluster defense in front of him the past 2 years.
You know, let me ask you, actually, Kevin, since we're on the topic of goaltenders. You know, 3-4 years down the line, who becomes our number one? We got a plethora of young kids, especially the one in Russia, you know, that are, you know, very, very close to being NHL ready. You know,
Halvorsen is the one of the ones coming to mind.
I really don't know who's going to be the number one, because right now, I mean, a guy that they never counted on ever being number one, who every time he gets in there does look impressive, is Skapski. I mean, he's the farthest along in his development. And I mean, if something, God forbid, did happen to Henrik Lundqvist in a year or two, I mean, I think Skapski could come in and fill in and be a guy like Talbot, where he comes in and maybe has some value. I mean, looking down the line further, I mean, he's obviously not the top-rated prospect, goalie prospect in the Rangers system, which I think is a problem that the Rangers probably love to have, that they have 3 or 4 guys that they might be able to go to in a few years.
But would
I think
you,
when people...
You know, Mark, I'm sorry, Mark.
Oh, no, go ahead. Finish yours.
Wouldn't you, and I can't pronounce his name correctly, but the kid in Russia that played with Buchnevich in the World Juniors, have you seen his stats over the past 5 or 6 games?
Yeah, they're like really crazy or something, right? He's only given up like a couple goals.
He's like 5-0 or 6-0 with like a 2.12 goals against average with a 944 or 954 save percentage. And, you know, when I look at kids that are ready, I mean, Halvorsen's a good goaltender. I think this Russian kid's going to be a far better goaltender than what Halvorsen is.
Well, one of the arguments also, whenever anybody talks about Henrik Lundqvist, we know a guy that constantly posts at both of our pages, and he brings up the point that no goalie has ever been in the top 5 of annual income or the top paid goaltender and won a Stanley Cup. And for years, I just got frustrated with it, going, maybe, I don't know, he's right. And then I always forget, Tim Thomas was older than Henrik Lundqvist and was a top paid goaltender in the league and won a Stanley Cup. And he did it by just putting the team on his back, much like the way Henrik did in 2014. So it's not to say that Henrik can't do it. It's just, can we keep him fresh enough and keep him sharp enough? And we know in the month of February, March, and April, we're going to get a top-notch goaltender. Take away Patrick Hornquist poking him in the eye with his stick, or was it Mark Stahl's stick? I still don't remember
Android.
Which one.
Android
oh,
stick.
Yeah.
All right. The gift that keeps on giving.
Everybody's favorite whipping boy, Daniel Girardi.
I know. I'll tell you what, guys. I might be in the minority, but the man, when he leaves, will leave a hell of a Ranger career away behind him. And this is Dan Girardi I'm talking about in this sentence. But it's...
You mean Dan
Earned
Royal?
His way onto this roster. No, Dan Girardi. Dan Girardi was an undrafted free agent that went right through. All right, so instead of taking a break, we're just going to go straight to quick shifts. And, all right, let's get right to it. The New York Rangers will finish where in the Metropolitan Division with how many points? Kevin, start them off.
I'm going to go with third, the 98 points.
Scott?
I'm going to actually say second with 97 points.
I will say third with 101. They'll do the same thing they did again last season. Just don't see what it is. All right, the Rangers' leading goal scorer, Scott.
Chris Kreider.
How many?
32.
Kevin.
Mika Zibanejad, 34.
And I'll be the one to boldly predict Rick Nash, 35. He'll come back to form. Again, don't know what it is, though. Raiders power play. Or sorry, no, Raiders goals per game, 2.87 last year. They were seventh in the league. Are they going to be higher or lower? Kevin.
I would say just slightly higher, maybe 2.95.
Scott.
I'm going to say that, I don't think that this division is going to take the goals per game, really to be that high. I'm going to go with a 2.71.
So lower. And you know what? I'm going to go with slightly lower, but I still think they'll break the top 10 in goals per game. Power play was ranked 14th last year, 18.6. Higher or lower, Scott?
I'm going to go the Rangers finish within the top 10 actually throughout the entire season. It was number 8 or 9 with a 21.2%.
Yeah, I'm going to go a little bit higher too, probably right at 8 or 9. I think those is the one area where the ceiling is very high. If you told me that the Rangers power play is going to be ranked 2nd or 3rd at the end of the year, I don't think that's an actual crazy statement.
Okay, and I'm going to go with probably a little bit higher as well. But I'm going to still say they're in around the 8 and 9 range. All right, penalty kill. Will that get back in the top 10 of the league? Kevin.
No way. If we're lucky for not in the bottom third.
Oof. God.
I'm going to go bottom half of the league. I think they suffer, but I don't think they suffer that much. And my thoughts are on the resurgence of our favorite whipping boy, Dan Girardi.
Rangers penalty kill was their Achilles heel last season, and if they want to compete, they better get it back in the top 10. Most improved Ranger at season's end, Kevin.
I'm going to have to say Kevin Hayes, and even though I don't think he had the worst season last year, a lot of people think that. I think there's all a bunch of talk. I think him and he's coming out with Jimmy VC with his friend, and I think Hayes is going to, JT Miller last year is going to have a big bounce back, we'll call it, year. Not quite a bounce back.
Scott.
Can I use a little sarcasm and say Tanner Glass will lead the Hartford Wolfpack?
Well, I think you already used it, but...
Tanner Glass might be the most improved by not being on the team. That's actually the biggest contribution he can make.
Tanner, we love you as a person.
Improved, you know what? Yeah, here's one for you. Most improved player on the team that wasn't on it last year will be Michael Grabner.
Okay. I'm going to go with Pavel Buchnevich because once he starts popping in goals, they're just going to fall like rain. And I think you're already starting to see it. Now the question is he going to be – I don't want to bring up the last Pavel that the Rangers had with great expectations by the name of Pavel Brendl, who had a couple goals in the preseason. We went gaga. And he's only scored 11 for his career. But there you go.
Can't be any worse than Nikolai Zhurnov.
Oh, God. Chris Drury outscored him in the 2009 playoffs with a broken hand. Most expendable reason.
Hugh Jessamine had a better NHL career than freaking Pavel Brent.
Yeah. Not by much. Most expendable Ranger at season's end, Scott.
Most expendable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna say it's gonna be Oscar Lindberg. Yeah, they've got way too many centers.
Yeah, I mean Lindberg's gonna be expendable, and I mean we're talking about someone that's not good. I mean Girardi and Staal are gonna be expendable, but I just don't know where they're gonna be able to expend them to other than Siberia, but.
Vegas.
I'm gonna say Rick Nash. I think the forward group takes a step forward. I think that all the younger forwards are gonna be able to carry this team forward. I think Nash is the one that's gonna be expendable.
It depends on how he's gonna be, but Kevin Hayes could find himself in that role. I know he was Scott's most improved guy. He has dazzled in the regular season, but see if he can improve on his defense, keep that skating up, and be as strong in the puck as he is right now. Because if he isn't, they're gonna Boone Nieves is knocking on the door, so they're gonna want to get him in, and maybe even better than just a fourth line center. They might want to get him to third unit as quick as they can. Scott, did you do your fantasy hockey drafts this year?
No, I'm done with fantasy hockey.
Okay, so we're gonna just skip the fantasy segment. That was a fast segment.
I'm never
in
doing that again.
Sports.
I got torched in it last year. I'm done with fantasy hockey.
I finished second, so I think
I'd rather
curious.
Play fantasy soccer than fantasy hockey.
Yeah, well, this time I'm for fantasy golf.
This was the first year ever, though, I drafted a Devil and an Islander before I drafted a Ranger, and it was
traitor.
Low.
Traitor.
I mean, yeah. And I
mean,
actually,
traitor.
I don't even think I'd.
Who
yeah.
are you?
I mean,
you're gone.
Hold
on. Can I hang up on him?
Well, no, it's for money. It's for money. Got to do it. All right, so look ahead to Thursday night. When the Rangers open up the season versus the New York Islanders, then they travel to St. Louis on Saturday night before returning Monday to take on the Western Conference champion, San Jose Sharks. How are we looking on those three games, Kevin?
We're looking at a tough start, I think. I mean, the Islanders always get up for Ranger games. I mean, St. Louis is still one of the better defensive teams in the league. San Jose, obviously defending champions, defending Western Conference champions. I think that's a tough start, but, you know, hopefully they can, you know, start off strong.
Scotty?
I'm going to give the Rangers 2-1.
What do you think they're going to drop the game to?
To San Jose. I don't see Detroit or the Islanders beating us in the first three games. Yeah, of the season. I'm looking at Rangers win a 5-2 over the Islanders on Thursday evening. With VC getting his first goal of his NHL career. And I'm looking at Detroit game being a 2-1 or maybe 3-2 game. The one kid that actually scares me over at Detroit is that kid Larson. That kid's just getting better and better every year.
Scott, they're playing the Blues on Saturday.
Oh, fuck. Fuck me. Why did I say Detroit?
That's the fourth game, I think.
It is the fourth game. I was trying to just go until we do our next show.
You're such an ass.
I was trying. I was hoping you were going to fix it.
I'm still going to go with my gut. I'm going to figure a 2-1. And I think San Jose is the game that they lose. And, I mean, am I supposed to be scared of Neil Yakupov on St. Louis?
No. Could solve that one very easily. I look at them. I think a 2-1 is very doable. The one thing I would caution Ranger fans about with Thursday night is Yaroslav Halak's record against Henrik Lundqvist is off the charts. But, you know, it's opening night, Madison Square Garden. Rangers are debuting a new team. The Islanders are full of youth. I think the Rangers should take that one. And the Blues right now, Connor Allen is aching, so they're going to get Carter Hutton, I believe, and we'll see how they do with that. Then it's just a matter of San Jose coming all the way to the East Coast. They could start out 3-0. They could start out 0-2-1. We'll figure that all out. That'll be on next week's podcast.
All I do know is that we're going to be hearing this a ton all year long. You ready for this?
Ready for it.
Let's go.